This is the 7th annual Berry Good Night Dinner. We're coming to you on location, on site from the magnificent estate of Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac and Bill Lirac. And let's just get right to it. We have two guests per segment tonight, and let's start with the host of the event. She's a retired attorney and an activist and an entrepreneur. She's the founder of the Berry Good Night Dinner and founder of the Berry Good Food Foundation, and her name is Michelle Lirac. Michelle, good to see you again.
Thanks, Joe. It's glad to have you guys back. This is year number four that we've recorded live here at the Berry Good Night Dinner.
Yes.
And I want to say again, 3 award-winning shows. Everyone until this one, we got to keep up the high level of performance.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to have with me my good friend who's been here at many of the Berry Good Night Dinners. And I forget, since the beginning? No, I don't even remember how many.
This is my six.
Six, okay.
Six
she
out of
the
seven.
First one. Six
okay.
out of seven. That's a pretty good record. And she's also one of the board members on the Berry Good Food Foundation. Yeah, sorry, Joe, I'm taking your cue.
Well, that's right. Well, I'll just explain who the other guest is this segment. She spent 30 years as an executive and creative producer, born in the States, spent most of her life in Europe, worked with the largest cable companies in Europe, reaching 17 countries, and then moved back here in 02, bought 70 acres south of the border, Guadalupe Valley in Mexico. And her name is Eileen Gregory. Eileen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, we had your husband on as well.
That's
so.
Right.
Is it Philip, your husband?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Took the sailboat and landed in Mexico.
Landed upside down in their yard.
Exactly.
What a fascinating life and story. I mean, they decided to come back to Mexico and grow grapes and make wine and open up a beautiful boutique hotel down there, the Grupo La Villa del Valle, right?
And restaurant, Corazón de Tierra, which is almost 5 years old.
Exactly.
Now, coming up very soon.
For our listeners, where is that location to San Diego?
Guadalupe Valley. It's 2 hours door-to-door from this very spot, Rancho La Jolla. That's what I can tell you.
Okay.
I've made it often.
Very easy drive.
An easy ride, yeah.
So it's just
Eileen, when did you open that up? How long ago?
We opened in 2005, and in fact, May 20th, we celebrated 11 years as a restaurant. As the hotel and the winery. And the restaurant, which is Corazón de Tierra, in August will celebrate 5 years.
That's wonderful.
Congratulations.
So, Michelle, 7th annual dinner. This started out in 2010 with a handful of people. He had no idea that this was going to get this big, did you? I mean, tonight you're expecting 400 people.
Yeah, at least. look, the idea was let's create community. There's some amazing farmers, ranchers, vintners on both sides of the border, chefs, activists,
food critics,
artisans,
scientists.
Yeah, I mean, look. This is a community of people who care passionately about food, about how it's grown, how it's prepared, what impact it has on our communities, on the environment, you know, a holistic view of food and something that we think is very important. So let's have a dinner, have everyone come together and hang out and chat. And and that's probably one of the ways in which I met Eileen, more or less. And then we decided, you know, I mean, look, the dinner's phenomenal. And we continue to add more people, bring in new bodies, you know, raise the energy level. And then last year around this time, what we decided was, you know, we'd created a lot of community and energy, and we kind of needed to take that show on the road and really reach out to the larger consuming community. And hence, the Berry Good Food Foundation was born to really bring that message to eaters, from little kids, community members, college students, etc. So, you know, that's sort of what we're doing. What do you say about all that, Eileen?
First of all, I have to say that Michelle is an absolute force of nature.
Isn't she, though?
She's extraordinary. The whole dinner series that is now in its 7th year is something that Michelle did just because she wanted to.
And my husband, Bill.
And Bill as well.
So. Well, all the berries here. I mean, we're sitting
He's a berry farmer, yeah.
We're sitting on a beautiful 6-acre piece of land. You're probably one of those beautiful places.
It's overlooking the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, and
it's a farm. It's where Rancho La Jolla.
There's people
farm
hang gliding above it.
And even
once was farmland.
And even if there's overcast, it's still beautiful. You know, you can't have a bad day around here. But Michelle, give him an idea.
I think Eileen was saying something. I'm sorry.
But, Just give people, I'm trying to give the listeners an idea of what's happening tonight, yeah, how many chefs, and just how the people have overtaken your property here with animals and food.
we have lots of farmers, animals, fresh produce. We have beers and wines, some made specifically just for tonight. Mm-hmm. We have a liqueur that's made from fruit that couldn't and nuts that couldn't be sold otherwise. We're going to talk about that in one of the segments later, what we call food waste. And we have 25 to 40 chefs. To be honest, I'm not sure.
All donating their time, though, right?
Yeah. You know, it's a communal event. Everybody participates in some meaningful way. They bring, they do, and or they talk about and generate energy. And that's what Eileen's here for. All of the above, she's bought her lovely sparkling rosé. She brings her energy, and she's, I think, one of the most passionate people in this group.
So, Eileen, you're also a board member of the foundation. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Happily and luckily.
Yeah. So now there's people don't know this, but the Mexican wines are getting quite popular these days, aren't they?
Mexican wines are extraordinarily popular within Mexico, of course. Mm-hmm. But recently we've gained a lot of fame both in the United States and in Europe as well. We've mm-hmm. been doing a lot of exporting from Mexico here in San Diego and farther afield. So Mexican wines can now be found not only in California, but in Arizona, in North Carolina, Chicago, New York. Yes, we had our wine at Cosme, Michelle and I.
Now your brand is Vina K.
Vina Cava.
Vina Cava, okay.
Can I just talk a little bit about the evening tonight?
So, please.
So if you don't mind me talking for you, because Michelle is obviously the creator and the creative and logistic.
I call her CIO, Chief Inspiration Officer, but that's for another discussion.
Well, she is that, but she's also very hands-on, so it's not just that she's the keeper of the vision. She's actually the person that makes sure that the vision gets actuated. So the idea for me is that this is a wonderful event where people that are all interested in what goes on in terms of local food, sustainable food, the farmers who are the people that we really need to be celebrating, because those are the people that are actually keeping us healthy, keeping the land healthy, mm-hmm. keeping the whole of San Diego as an area that we can all be really proud of.
10,000 farms, right?
Exactly. And they are the unsung heroes. So I think that one of Michelle's first ideas was to throw a party for the farmers, mm-hmm. so that the chefs, who are all super rock stars, and the chefs that come here absolutely are.
It was Michelle's Cafe Gratitude for the farmers, I think. So.
Well, I think, which came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know.
Look, we have more farms per capita than anywhere in the United States, but we really don't think of ourselves as a farm community, wanted to change that. And quite frankly, no farms, no food. Yeah. And we forget that. And better food comes from the farms, the smaller farms that are in our community. And we need to know about them, we need to support them, and promote them as much as we can, and that is what it's about.
And to support them, we need to know what guise that support should take. So the dialogue that gets opened here is what's really important for everybody in this community, because instead of acting in isolation in the little area that we're in, you know, obviously our concerns are very cross-border, and I think that there are a lot of opportunities for us to help here, and conversely for us to be helped by what goes on in San Diego. And basically we are the same area, it's just a line drawn arbitrarily in the sand, and suddenly we're just two different countries. But basically we're the same. We're the same people, we're the same geographical situation. Mm-hmm. So I think, by and large, what I would say that what we really need to be concentrating on is aggregating this very active, very enthusiastic, very committed and inspired community, giving them a forum so that they can exchange ideas and come up with a platform of the things that we really need to do.
And forging new relationships here, which one of which is being Greg Cook finding his wife, for God's sake. So.
Well, that's what it's really about.
Not
it's
to mention business.
It's a dating service.
There have been a lot
service.
Of relationships created at this dinner. I will say no more.
It's building relationships. anyway, of any kind.
Anyway, we're coming up on my break right now, but thank you so much, Eileen, for joining us. Eileen Gregory and Michelle Lirak, and we're going to take a little bit break. We'll come right back with more great stuff from the Barry Goodnight Dinner 7th Annual. Hang on.
Thank you.
AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back at the Barry Goodnight Dinner, 7th Annual, with the founder, Michelle Lirak. Michelle, welcome back.
Thanks, Joe.
And in this segment, we're going to focus on food waste, and you have two expert guests as well. First off, we have Ellie Brown. She's the director of the San Diego Food System Alliance. And welcome to the show, Ellie.
Thank you so much.
And also with her, Calla Rose Ostrander, who worked with Gavin Newsom when he was mayor of San Francisco, correct?
That's right.
And a specialist also in what is your area of expertise? Why don't you tell our audience?
Oh, well, I advise individuals and nonprofits who are committed to stabilizing Earth's climate.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I guess Michelle wanted this segment to be about food waste and focus on that. So what were your main questions?
So look, this is a huge issue around the globe, across our nation, and clearly in our own community. And the situation is a tremendous amount of food gets wasted in this country. The statistics are anywhere from 40 to 50% of the food that's grown gets thrown away. And that's food that could be utilized in so many ways that are better than simply putting it in our landfills and creating a problem. And we wanted to talk about it because it's something we're focusing on at the event today. Mm-hmm. We have five different kinds of waste disposal. We have certain kinds of plant-based paper-looking products that we can break down to soil on site. We have corn-based ones that we can break down. Then we have vegetable waste, which can go to compost. And we even segregated the two parts of animal waste. Look, we hope there's no waste at all. We hope everything gets that was created and grown for tonight is eaten by the people that are here. And what is left, if there is any, we want to ultimately utilize to its full extent. And so there's a whole cross-section there. So that's the one thing about the party here tonight. And then the foundation, we do a series of panels on a series of topics that really are about the intersection of food and the environment. This year we started with soil, we just completed meaty issues, and the next one for us on the agenda is on food waste in August. So we thought it would be good to let the listeners really understand what is food waste, what does it mean, what can I do about it, how bad is the situation? So mm-hmm. What do you want to say about that, Ellie?
Well, I think the idea that we're really trying to encourage is that food waste is actually a valuable resource for people, animals, and soil. So really, in my coalition and also other zero waste advocates, really believe that there is no such thing as waste when it comes to food. So I commend you for all the work that you're doing at this event to
Likewise.
Make sure that it's a zero waste event. Mm-hmm. And also that we need to place more value on food after we purchase it. I think we make a lot of value decisions when we're purchasing the food, but often gets lost in our fridge and forgotten. So there's a lot we can do as consumers to make sure that we're really utilizing the food. And furthermore, reallocating that money, that household expenditure that's going straight into garbage cans so that we're purchasing better food, supporting our local economy.
I like what you said earlier, this idea that, when you buy food that's cheap, you're more likely to simply toss it and not complete it because it has had less value to you. But then when you figure out if you spend a dollar and you throw away 25 every time of the 25 cents of that dollar, that you could buy better food and not waste it and get, right? I think that's
less,
fantastic.
Less is more, quality and less quantity.
That's what tonight's about, and
exactly.
That's clearly something we should all be guided by.
And exactly. Probably buy less things in bags and cans and boxes and buy more things in the produce section, right? They say the periphery of the store is where you should be looking, not right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a huge amount of our waste, and we don't even talk about it when it comes to the food system, is all of the packaging that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an incredible amount of energy and resources and water that go into packaging, and then also to the food itself. And then the whole industrial process is incredibly wasteful. So the more you can buy products that are fresh, that have not gone through a long process, that don't come in a lot of packaging, they're so much better for the environment, and they're also so much better for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a win-win here. So when we're talking about food waste, I think we really, really have to talk about, decisions about what we value, which is why it was so great to have this conversation with you two ladies, and take a step back and say we have what we need. You just have to be able to find it and then know what to do with it when you get it.
Well, how much food are we putting in landfills right now annually in the United States?
They say currently farm to fork, 40% of the food that's produced goes to
landfills. And we're having methane problems, they think, right
methane
now.
Methane and resources that are spent on producing the food. Yeah.
So the first thing is, you know, get a good portion, eat what you get, right? Buy good food. The second thing is, if you have something left, then put it to its best use.
Exactly.
And that's what we're talking about. And there's a pyramid of best use. You want to talk about that, Ellie?
People, animals, and soil. So in the county alone, there's a lot of people that's food insecure. 1 in 7 people in the county are food insecure. So we want to encourage businesses to donate as much as possible. And there's law that protects them from liability if they donate. And they don't know about that a lot of times. So we can ask our businesses that we go to, restaurants and grocery stores, hey, do you guys donate? And do you also compost? These are simple questions that we can ask to change the system here locally. But also animals and soil. And we know that compost has a lot of great benefits to our environment, which Kella Rose can talk about as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, for composting, can the apartment owner or apartment renter or the condo owner, can they do that at home? And because I don't think people do that. And the garbage disposal, that's probably something we should get away from, right?
Right. Well, you know, composting right now is city by city. Different cities do it different ways. San Francisco diverts 80% of its waste away from landfills. San Diego is just getting caught up to that, and there's a lot of movement. People are really looking for that. If you don't have curbside composting, you can actually do it in your backyard if you have a yard. There's a lot of good bins out there that you can get. It's going to be a great product for your garden.
Community gardens. Maybe they should have community compost.
You know, that's one thing that we're working on in LA is making the community gardens community compost sites so people can come by on their bikes and drop stuff off. There's actually LA Compost already does that. It's a great function up there.
That is a great idea.
But this is going to have to start happening really everywhere across the state because there's some new laws in effect that are really going to cause, we already understand that we segregate regular trash from our recyclables, but now we're adding in a third component, which is organic matter. And then we would actually say, well, we need to take it further than that, which is segregate the organic matter in first to humans and animals and then compost instead of simply taking that whole organic pile and putting it in the biofuel.
If we could figure out some kind of financial incentive or even some tax relief or something for people who do that, or I know electronic waste gets, you get paid by the pound, and it comes out to quite a bit for so maybe if we could figure out a way to incentivize people to do it in addition for just the sustainability factor.
Yeah, it's a great point. In San Francisco, what we did was we tiered the rate structure. So for waste pickup, you paid for your black bin. So everything that was going to a landfill, you paid for that. And for the blue bin, your recyclables, you paid a little bit less, and your green bin was free. Huh. And that's the way we incentivized it. Ah. So at the end of the day, we really want to see big green and blue bins and really small little black bins going out there. And that's something that can be done at the municipal level. You know, cities can negotiate those contracts, you can put that in place, and then the ratepayer benefits from doing the right thing.
Yeah.
From the business perspective, there are incentives to donating. Farms have a donation incentives for donating. There's a lot of parameters that makes it hard. So the green bins are really going to be really expensive until we change the rate structure. But in order to avoid putting all that stuff in the green bin, they can donate and then they can reduce the source of the food to begin with. That's more on the business level.
And I would say to the listeners, look, what we're talking about is where we want to be. We would like to have this system in San Diego more like it is in LA or even San Francisco and say, call your local decision makers and let them know that you think this is important because we can feed the hungry people in our community. We can reduce the amount of methane and other gases that we're releasing into the atmosphere. We can reduce the cost for animals and raising animals and make them healthier. And we can also restore our soil and have it sequester and capture more carbon. I mean, there's no downside, right? So we just need to take the steps to make it happen.
Huh. Absolutely. Thanks, Michelle, for saying that. Right now, we're in a really crucial budget time with the state. So if you know your state senator or your assembly member, give them a call and let them know that food waste matters to you because there are some big incentives the state's considering right now putting out to cities to help with this.
There's money, that's right, that's being considered specifically to help communities respond. Thank you for raising that. There's a struggle, as there always is in any budget negotiation, and we really do need to have this money go toward this CalRecycle program so that really people and businesses are incentivized to you know, move forward in this.
Mm-hmm. So we're about 1 minute left here, but Ellie, the San Diego Food System Alliance, SDFSA.org, what do they do?
We're a coalition that's focused on creating a better food environment in San Diego through collaboration and policy change. So what Michelle mentioned, CalRecycle and other policy opportunities to help improve our local food system here in San Diego.
Wonderful.
I'm really excited that we're talking about food waste here at the Berry Good Dinner because I believe the dinner is all about connecting us better to the producers and the food makers in our food system.
And, you know, we're going to talk about in our next segment the real cost of food and find out why is cheap food so cheap, bad food cheap and good food less cheap, okay?
But we have to wrap it right there. Thank you so much to Ellie Brown with the San Diego Food System Alliance and also to Kala Rose Ostrander, who is a strategic advisor. And a repeat guest.
Joe, it's great to see you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're coming right back with more from the Berry Good Night Dinner. Hang on.
AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and this is the time where Richard likes to thank our sponsors.
But I'm going to thank them really, really quickly, Joe, because of the dinner. So in order, with no comments, UBS, Signature Analytics, Polito Epic CPAs, Cost Segregation Initiatives, Brenda Geiger with Geiger Law Office, California Republic Bank, Hub International, formerly known as Mars Maddox Insurance, LG Experience and the Lombardi Group, Hearthstone Private Wealth Management with Paul Hines, who heads up the SeniorSafeAndSound.org initiative, Worldwide Credit with Nathan Watkins, and for those of you who are starving like us because there's all this great food around.
Well, there's also Lestat's Coffee House is about to open their third location, and all, of course, the Berry Good Food Foundation, and we are back at the 7th Annual Berry Good Night Dinner with two more great guests. And in this segment, we're going to focus on the real cost of food. And one of our guests is the owner of the Red Door Restaurant and Wine Bar in Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge up there in beautiful Mission Hills. And her name is Trish Watlington. Trish, welcome back to the show. I think you've been on with us before, right?
I have been on with you before, and thank you so much. I'm happy to be back.
Excellent.
And Trish, for the record, I need your recipe to your biscuits and gravy.
You have to see her at the break, Richard.
Chef Miguel is here, actually. Okay. You can wander out and ask him.
Yeah, okay.
But good luck with that, Richard. A lot of times they're very protective of their proprietary information. But also in this segment, we have the Deputy Director of Food and Technology at Friends of the Earth. It's FOE.org, and it's Kari Hammerschlag. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you, and well said on my name.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Jawohl. Anyway, I know Michelle wanted us to focus on the real cost of food.
This is the financial part of the show, Joe.
Yes, absolutely. So basically explain to people, you know, why good food costs more and cheap food probably isn't that good for us. Do you want to start with that?
I think I should let Kari start.
Okay.
Why good food costs more? Well, why do we have so much cheap food in this country? So Americans spend less as a percentage of our income on food than any country on the planet, practically.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're used to cheap food, and it didn't always used to be that way. In the 1960s, we spent about a third of our income on food, and now it's less than 10%. And part of that is our policy. It's our agricultural policies, which are subsidizing the production of cheap raw ingredients for processed food and factory farm meat and dairy. So we have big subsidies for commodity crops like corn and soy that are the raw ingredients for the junk food.
And they have big, strong lobbies in Washington.
Big, strong lobbies in Washington. And in contrast, you know, support for organic, healthy fruits and vegetables are very, very little support in terms of policy support for those healthy foods. So, of course, that's one reason, but that's not the only reason, but that's an important one.
Let me ask you about schools a little bit. I know it's not on the topic here, but are we getting better about the quality of food in our schools at the grade school and high school levels? I mean, you do hear some schools tearing out lawns, putting in gardens, and kids getting more into farming and growing things. But are we getting the
And taking out vending machines?
Richard's with the Berry. He's got his own foundation works on this, too. But have we finally gotten the soft drinks out of the schools yet? I mean, I don't even know. Does anyone know here? Maybe it's the wrong audience. I don't know.
Well, let me say that in terms of food in school. We have a long way to go, but we've made great progress thanks to Michelle Obama's great work and a lot of other folks who have pushed for new policies in Washington. It's one of the biggest, I think, important gains that we've seen in our food policy, that we doubled the amount of fruits and vegetables that kids have on their plates at schools across the whole country. Mm-hmm. And actually, that bill right now is being kind of demolished by the Republicans in Congress. We're trying to keep it as strong as we can, but we have seen increases in fresh fruits and vegetables, so that's positive. There's definitely progress, but lots more.
And if you go over to Europe, it's probably a lot. I saw a documentary recently about in France, how the kids in the grade school, I mean, they actually have chefs in school giving
Michael Morris.
Yeah, that was the one, Where to Invade Next.
Right.
I know Dave's seen it a few times, right?
Well, we've gone so far backwards, because when I was growing up, we actually did have chefs and cooks in our kitchens, and everything was made from scratch in the schools, and kids got real food. And now way too much of it comes in processed containers, and it's already processed. I was reading something the other day about someone who was trying to bring back white milk to the breakfast menus of schools, and the teachers and the kids were protesting that they wanted chocolate milk.
For breakfast? Wow.
For breakfast.
Oh, my gosh. And I remember when I went to grade, there was a home economics. I think it was just for the girls. I don't know if they let guys in the class. Do you remember home economics?
In my high school, guys could take home ec.
I think they should teach kids how to cook. I mean, it's a good tool to have, and you know, there's nothing wrong with learning how to cook at an early age, you know?
More and more schools are putting in school gardens. That's actually become quite popular, and I don't know, you know, I think it's making an impact because kids are actually able to see where food comes from, and learning that it doesn't just come on a styrofoam tray, that, you know, you can grow it.
And lurking underneath all this is the obesity issue, which is, you know, wasn't asked, but obviously
it's
connected.
Yeah, and then also the type 2 diabetes issue.
Yeah.
Right. So people think that they're getting cheap food, but the reality is it costs a lot. They pay for it dearly.
Down the line.
So you either pay now or you pay later, but you're going to pay for it. And, you know, a lot of the true cost of food is being externalized, and we pay for it in terms of rising rates of obesity and other health, you know, other diet-related diseases that are, you know, 75% of all the healthcare costs come from diet-related
illness.
It's preventable. It's not all diet. It's some exercise and lifestyle, but it's preventative. And healthy food, like fruits and vegetables, fresh fruits and vegetables are very protective. Mm-hmm. Whereas factory farm meat and dairy, if you eat too much, you're going to have higher rates of diabetes, heart disease,
and
obesity.
Isn't sugar and fructose in just about
that everything, right? And where does that come from?
Cornstarch. Yeah.
Comes from the corn, which is subsidized. And then there's a lot of environmental costs, too. So that's the other piece that you have to, you know.
Well, the crops that we grow have changed over time also. I mean, when hundreds of years ago, corn was actually had a high nutritional value. Now it's been genetically modified, hybrid, changed so that it is
lots of
starch and not much nutrition.
Yeah, the biodiversity is under attack, and so I hear what you're saying.
Question, how do we educate the public so that they're more willing to pay, shall we say, more money for better food? I mean, obviously, it's a fairly simple concept to say that the value is much, much greater, but a lot of people only look at price.
We're doing it because we're starting a community-supported restaurant project in our restaurant that is going to offer classes and special dinners and make more of a community and more education available to the public. So on our very small scale, that's how we're doing it. I think it's a grassroots. A grassroots kind of movement.
And I think some of the big box stores have organic. They're providing marketing. Organic foods. We're seeing more of that. I don't want to name names, but you know, when I say big box, you probably know what I'm thinking of. But
but then one has to question where the organic food comes from, because not only are we paying for cheap food with our health, but we're also paying for it with the demise of the planet.
Yeah.
And so organic is certainly better, but organic is not necessarily, you know, large scale agricultural organic is not necessarily better, at least for the sake of the workers and the distance that the product travels. So
Mm-hmm. Right, but it can be done really well, and particularly in San Diego, you've got the largest number of organic farms and small farms, and you know, when you pay the price of organic, you're paying for healthy soils, you're paying for healthy clean water, you're paying for more abundant water, because when you farm organically, you create soils that can hold the water, you're paying for not poisoning the pesticides and the farmers, you know, you're paying basically the real cost of the food, and it's better for all of us. And when you buy organic meat, you're not getting the antibiotics and the hormones, and when you buy factory farm meat, you're getting the antibiotics and the hormones that are giving rise to antibiotic resistance, which, you know, 22,000 people die every year.
So the farmers markets that are popping up more and more, would you recommend that's a good place where people should visit weekly? Or
highly, highly recommend that. And one of the things that you get out of visiting a farmer's market is not only local organic food, but you also reduce the food waste problem, because large-scale farms throw out a lot of food because it's not standard size. Hmm. And food that's sold in a farmer's market doesn't need to be standard size like it does in a grocery store.
Huh. And the other issue I see is just the huge transportation cost and gasoline cost and so on to transport food. It is tremendously wasteful.
There you go. But Trish Watley, we have to wrap it up. We're coming up on another breaker, but owner of Red Door Restaurants and Wellington Steak and Martini Lounge, Trish Watley, thanks for being our guest this segment. And also Kari Hammerschlag, Deputy Director of Food and Technology at Friends of the Earth, FOE.org. All these websites will be on our site, by the way, folks, at iwaymoney.com. We'll come right back back with another segment from the Barry Goodnight Dinner. Hang on. All right, we're back on location at the 7th Annual Barry Goodnight Dinner at beautiful La Jolla Farms here at the estate of Bill and Michelle Lirak.
So, Joe, last segment, I'm getting hungry.
We're getting out there. Live music, live animals, 400 people have taken over the place. It's really magnificent. But I know in this segment, Michelle wanted us to focus on farmer sustainability. We have two experts in that area. We have with us probably the founding, the queen bee of farmers markets here in San Diego, the CEO of San Diego Markets, and many people know the name of it. It's Kat White. Kat, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I don't think that Rich has much to worry about in terms of being hungry. As soon as you bust out of that door, you got a lot to choose from down there.
25 chefs offering their wares out there. And then also this segment we have with Tarabella Ranch in Deluz Valley, an agribusiness owner of Farm to Office, Jeff Alves. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So we want to talk about farmer sustainability in this segment. And what can you tell us about that particular area in terms of you know, how they're doing and in that regard? So.
Sure, yeah. Sustainability is really important, especially when we think of local family farms staying in business and staying in practice with whatever their craft may be. Mm-hmm. I come from a multi-generational family of farmers, and so does my wife, and I think sometimes it's getting harder and harder for some families to keep that business going. I come from a family of dairy farmers, and that's a really tough business. I've kind of ventured off and started farming with some of my wife's family, and we're keeping that multi-generational farm going. And I think you just have to get really creative in wanting to work with multiple generations to keep sustainability going, and not a lot of farms have that opportunity. And I think if there's someone that's young that wants to be in agriculture, we need to kind of grasp those opportunities. I'm not sure the exact number, but I think the average age of the farmer is in their 50s. It's like 52, 53.
I think it's actually 62.
Yeah, okay, right, so 62. So, 60, well, yeah. So that was when I was back in college, so it's been a little while. Yeah. So it's probably getting older. So Mac, I think a big part for me looking at sustainability is really maximizing how you can keep a younger generation involved in farming.
Well, you're pretty young. You're like, what, 28 or so, or what?
Thank you. I'm 32.
Yeah. Get out of here, really.
Yeah.
It's all that good food, you see.
It's the Portuguese blood, baby.
Now, where is Deluz Valley, real quick?
It's nestled. It's a beautiful farming region nestled right in between Fallbrook and Temecula.
Gotcha.
So it's right at North County, right on the county line.
And you have how many acres, and what do you raise up there?
It's our grandparents still live on the ranch. We do all fruit trees out on that ranch, and there's about 50 acres in production. It's a over 200-acre ranch, though, out in Deluz.
So peaches, pears, and what?
Avocados, citrus, figs, grapes. grapes, a lot of specialty types of crops, more tropical type fruits. And we also partnered with, we have family farms up in Northern California doing nuts and dried fruits as well.
Wonderful.
Do you have wells on your property, or what's your story with water?
Yeah, water's a big issue. We're pretty fortunate on our ranch out in Deluse. There's a big natural body of water that we're able to irrigate from, but there is certain months throughout the year where we're paying those high ag fees, and San Diego County, of course, has the highest in the state. Mm-hmm. The farms up in Northern California, a whole other story, much more difficult.
Yeah,
issue with ground storage water. So that's definitely something that's a big issue there. Each farm kind of takes on its own beast, and being a part of multiple farms, definitely have had first-hand experience with that, but water's definitely, you know, we're always doing the rain dance for sure, but mm-hmm. storage water is a big part of that. If you don't have the infrastructure to contain water, you're not going to really be able to capture water and save it and use it to your best source.
Kat, in your experience, obviously you deal with a lot of vendors, a lot of farmers. How is sustainability, how are things trending with those vendors and their ability to maintain their businesses?
You know, it's tough here in California, and Jeff and his family have done a tremendous job in terms of looking for new avenues to sell their produce. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of direct marketing. They're in farmers markets where they can sell direct to the consumer. Mm-hmm. He's been very creative in terms of creating farm to office, which delivers directly to offices, restaurants, that kind of thing. They really have to look for creative ways to sell. And Jeff, I don't want to imply that it's easy for them, but he is a multi-generational farmer, so he's on land that has been in that family for a long time. When you talk about farmers' ages trending up, mm-hmm. being at 62, 63 now, it's because we actually have a good, strong desire in California for new farmers to go into that business. Even though it's a hard business, mm-hmm. there's a lot of passion there.
Yeah.
Jeff and his wife have been really involved with Future Farmers of America. There's a pool of people that wants to go there, but take somebody that's not even in Jeff and Nicolina's situation that has to buy land in San Diego County, and they're bidding against developers.
Mm.
Tough thing. This is a very high cost land area.
Yeah.
So almost
the entire state is.
Yeah, exactly. No, all of California is facing this, and also the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. same situation. You know, mm-hmm. and unless you're in the middle of the country where you're selling corn, it's tough to get a hold of land to grow here. So we do everything we can in terms of working with our farmers and our vendors that use farmers' crops and ingredients in the artisan foods that they create to try and help them think outside the box, find different ways to get directly to the consumers. Anytime they can sell directly to consumers, mm-hmm. as opposed to going through a distributor. We have terrific mm-hmm. distributors here in San Diego. We've got some really high integrity guys distributing produce, but they still have to make a living too. So anytime the farmer is selling to them and then the distributor is taking their cut, that's a little bit less money than the farmers putting in their pocket.
Which is why the farmers markets are so important.
We of
were
course.
Just plugging them. So I know you have Little Italy. Do you just want to plug some mm-hmm. of the more popular ones? Go for
sure.
it.
Sure. I mean, I run the largest farmers market in San Diego County, Little Italy.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that comes close, and depends if you want to talk about what the largest market is in San Diego County, you can talk to me and it's Little Italy, or you can talk to that liar Dave Larson that runs Hillcrest. and he'll tell you it's Hillcrest. Kidding. Love Dave. But we probably go neck and neck in terms of the largest markets.
So,
but there's actually almost 60 farmers markets in San Diego.
I was
going to
ask you, wow.
Week. Yeah, lots and lots of markets.
Now that's come a long way, right?
It's great. Our North Park market is, we just changed locations to an easier to get to location, better foot traffic, and it's in a matter of 2 months has gone from one block to two, and we're getting ready to expand to three. That's on a weekday, Thursday afternoon. We get a lot of chefs. We get a lot of shoppers out there.
And if they want more information, sdweeklymarkets.com, right?
That'll work.
You know,
yeah.
So
but question, how do we bring farmers to the city? I mean, can we grow crops on tops of condominiums? Can we grow things up the side of buildings? I mean, what can you do?
You can do some mm-hmm. of that, and it's an interesting quandary because most urban farming is really designed to be hydroponic. There's some back and forth on whether that's real farming. I'm going to do those air quotes there.
Yeah.
It's certainly a wave of the future in one degree, but there are people that believe that if you're not getting the nutrients from the dirt, it's not exactly the same as what you do when you do hydroponic, mm-hmm. but it's certainly a great avenue. The other part of that, though, is looking at the whole food not lawns kind of movement. So mm-hmm. that vast swath of grass at the San Diego County building down near my Little Italy market,
mm-hmm.
Why isn't that tomatoes or lettuce or squash or something instead of grass? So
city,
when we've got limited
county?
Water,
yeah.
Why aren't we using it for food?
Yeah, City College ripped out some of their lawn.
They did.
And put some gardens in
there.
Yeah,
they've done a nice job there.
You're seeing more and more schools do that, I think. So
yeah, it's a great thing.
That's a nice thing to see. But how about unforeseen pests or something like that? I mean, that could really wreak havoc, right? Cost, right?
So sure. Farmers are business people. You know, it's a little bit more of a literally they bear the seasons. You know, and they're one of their greatest business partners. We say in our family is Mother Nature. So you have to work with Mother Nature, and that's a very unpredictable relationship.
She's moody.
Yeah, she can be very moody. You know, I mean, it's not someone you want to really upset. But yeah, there's lots of unforeseen challenges that farmers have versus some other entrepreneurial paths that other business people may go down. And weather, pests, you know, there's a lot of outside, certain outside forces that could play an impact on that. And so you have to be prepared for that. And I think one of the greatest ways you could do that is to be a diversified farmer, especially nowadays. If you put all your eggs in one basket, no pun intended, but if you are focusing all on just one crop and you do have pests that attack that one crop or something unforeseen attack that crop, well, there goes your whole business. So if you diversify and have different avenues, different crops, you know, Kat mentioned think outside the box, you have to get creative. And for farmers, you have to think outside the field, outside the orchard sometimes with creative ways to diversify your operation.
So are small farms going away or being consolidated? Because I know if you don't have certain enough, you know, land, I mean, it's a huge challenge.
No, San Diego County is a really unique place. We are one of the number one counties, if not the number
we
one.
The number one county for small farms.
Yeah,
that's right here.
So there, I don't think small farms are going away. If anything, I think that there's going to be a great potential for them to grow.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got to wrap it right there. But thank you so much, Kat White, with the farmers markets all over town here, and Jeff Alves with Tarabella Ranch. And we got to wrap it up. So, Richard, thank you. And thank you, Michelle Lyrek, and the Berry Goodnight Dinner. 7th annual, we're on site here. Thanks to Dave Sniff, our program director, who's on site with us on this beautiful 6-acre estate overlooking the ocean. And thanks to Craig Blank, our con executive. All these podcasts are on iwaymoney.com, and you can get all these websites for all our guests tonight. Thank them all. There are too many to thank. So we'll see you next week, and take care. Good night now.
AM 760 KFMB.